As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today. Have you ever wondered if you're the problem, if maybe you're the narcissist? Well, today, Rosanna Fay joins me to talk about how to know if we're the victim or the toxic individual. And a self-help tip is how to use your history to identify patterns of interpersonal dysfunction. This is Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse, and I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, we're going to take a deep dive into the dynamics of narcissistic abuse. As a listener-supported podcast, thank you for considering becoming a subscriber for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Near the end of that relationship, I was feeling so crazy, so confused, and really hurt, actually. And there was a moment I remember where my ex actually accused me. He was my husband at that time, but he accused me of being the problem. And I'll never forget it because we were in a car driving, and I'd just been hoovered back into the relationship again. And I had known that during this brief month period that we were apart, that he had been seeing other women, and particularly he had a girlfriend, and he flew her into town. And they even looked at houses. They shopped houses that weekend. And I remember looking at him and was horrified that he would do that while we're just in a break. We weren't even divorced. We were just taking a break. And he was popping by to have breakfast with me. I think more to check up on me during that period. But he was still like trying to stay in touch with me. But yet he would do all of this. And I remember confronting him about how horrible that was, how hurtful that was. And he looked at me and he said, Carrie, you're going to have to decide whether or not you can live with a sex addict. Essentially, making the problem me, that it was my inability to accept him and accept the situation that was causing all of the issues. Now, that's not as dramatic as I know I hear all the time from people who get a hold of me, from clients, from commenters on social media that share about how they actually have a partner that even takes it further, that accuses them of being the problem. That the whole reason the relationship's going wrong is because of their difficulties, their wanting too much, them being too sensitive, or they're having maybe some kind of mental health issues or interpersonal issues. But essentially, the toxic person flips the script and makes the victim, the survivor, the problem. And it is utterly crazy making because it becomes really tricky to know who is the problem. Because I don't know if you did, but I started to react to the abuse. Did you? Was that something you started to do as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, reacting is kind of a survival technique, right? We have to, in order to survive, it's like, you know, we just want to stop what's going on and to protect ourselves to survive. We just do something out of character, out of our own integrity, out of our normal behavior, and do something that we just normally wouldn't do to stop the abuse or stop the attack. Just thinking about what you said, oh, are you going to have to deal? You're going to have to deal with this sex addict. You know, you're going to have to make the decision. He puts it on you. And that's what one of the things they do is they put it on us so that they don't have to take that accountability and responsibility for their own actions. One of the things my ex would do is he would say, well, you married an alcoholic. You know, like, you know that I have a problem. You know that I'm an alcoholic and I do this. And so you knew this walking into this relationship. You knew this before you married me. So now I'm the problem because I knew this and I chose to marry him. I chose to be in these situations. So when he would rage at me or yell at me or take my mood from calm and cool and collected on the couch and then start a fight with me because maybe, you know, looking back in hindsight, I think he was probably upset about something or something happened to him at work and he didn't really know how to hold that emotion or try to, even just identify it as anger or frustration or whatnot. So he placed it on me. And when I got angry and frustrated, he was, oh, I don't have to feel my own emotion. So now Ro gets to feel it.
Yeah.
And so now I'm the one that's getting mad and angry because he's picked and poked and prodded on me when I'm just like laying on the couch. He's asking me if I'm in a bad mood. And then out of a reaction, so this is the reactive abuse, I come back and I do things out of character, like I yell back, I rage back, and I start to mirror him and his how he's behaved in the past. And then I ask, like, am I an angry person? Mm. Is that me? Mm-hmm. That's where I get to that point where I felt like I was the problem because I don't normally act out like this, but I'm starting to like mirror some of his behaviors. And that's where I would ask, am I the problem?
Do you know why you mirrored them? Because I know why I did. I'd love to hear what got you to. Did you get to the end of yourself and you just get frustrated and react? Or was there other reasons why you were mirroring them?
I think there was more. Okay. So I'm thinking about this. Just let's see how I can articulate this because I'd love to hear what you think. But I think looking back, and I did not know this then in the marriage, but I think looking back, I was really observant of how he behaved and what worked for him. And it seemed to me that if he raged and got what he wanted, he did get what he wanted. That was his supply, was letting out that anger and then blaming it on either alcohol or me somehow, that I was the one that changed his mood or I'm putting him in a bad mood, I frustrate him. But it worked for him to rage out. And I would notice that and observe that and go, okay, well, if that works for him and he has this episode of acting out, then I do it and maybe I'll feel better because he seems to feel better after he does it. So I try it. But the difference is he feels better when he does it. Me, I feel worse because it's not in alignment with who I am. Like, I don't just get angry like that. I don't rage out. I don't, you know, there was one time I threw a plate at him. That's not something I do. But when you poke a bear and you or pull a dog's tail, they're going to turn around and try to bite you back. And it's not something they would normally do. But that's something I did. And I think it's because I watched him do it in the past. And I thought, well, that works for him. He seems to be calm after he does this episode. So let me try an episode to stop him from yelling at me and screaming at me. He gets calm and I'm agitated. So that's the difference. It really didn't work for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never saw it as a successful effort to deal with difficult emotions. That never was what something that crossed my mind. But I thought that somehow, if I modeled the negative behavior, almost like a parent, if I treat you poorly in the way that you're treating me poorly, maybe I can increase your cognitive empathy. Maybe I can make you more aware of how crappy that feels. And so you're like, oh, you'll get a clue. Oh, that's bad. I shouldn't be doing that. I need to stop doing that. So mine was sort of like to teach him a lesson.
Oh, you know? Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. But it didn't work because I think what all it did was it degraded the situation and maybe even degraded the conversation. So if he was crappy to me and I was crappy back to him, he just got crappier to me. So it didn't really like do what I wanted it to do, but
it just increased the crappiness to each other.
Exactly.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I think maybe part of it was that as well. It was like, hey, if I show him how he's treating me, he would see how bad it is on this end. Mm-hmm. He would see how awful it is for me. And maybe he would have some compassion and go, wow, this is how I treat you. I should stop that. Then maybe we shouldn't have this kind of abusive relationship. It was a we. Yeah. In that relationship, it was always like, we need help. We are so angry sometimes. We are in a cycle. And I would take that on as if, yeah, that's partly me too. So there was this back and forth. Like if I could teach him a lesson, he'd be teaching me lessons. But it wasn't like that because the power dynamic is I'm down here and he's way up here and he's the one that's teaching me and conditioning me and training me how to behave. I felt powerless.
Yeah, yeah. You're making a really another super powerful point, and that is the degree that we lose our identity and that our identity becomes sort of mixed in. It's, you know, almost like we merge with them. There's an enmeshment with them. And I remember doing that too. Like I knew he had the problem. I knew he was serial acting out. Now I know a lot of people don't know their partner has a problem. They're not for sure about that. And I want to definitely talk more about that. But I knew he had the issues because we made the discovery early into the relationship that he was serial cheating and that this was his relationship with sex was really bizarre. And he even admitted it was really strange. He'd tell stories on himself. So He had identified himself as a problem. I identified himself as a problem, but it became our problem, not his problem, mm-hmm. but our problem. And I know partly why I did that. I partly did that because I looked at that situation and thought this, the shame of his behavior was so out of this world, so intense, that I don't know how I could have borne up underneath of it if it had been me doing these things. So I wanted to sort of save him from it. So if I made it us, then somehow it's like I'm carrying the weight with him, like two people carrying a really heavy, heavy stone together. Maybe we can move it easier. And then I also thought that that would make it more bearable for him so he could then go out and get help and talk about it. But I knew I didn't cause him to do that because he had a history and it'd been a long time part of his life. It wasn't like we met each other young and then this kind of became a part of our relationship. No, I met him after I'd had a long relationship and I'd had a successful marriage. So he brought this into the marriage. So I knew it wasn't mine, but I just thought that if I carried it with him, it would make it easier to address.
But it sounded as if you were the only one really doing the heavy lifting. It didn't sound like he was carrying much of that stone at all.
Well, he said he did. I think that's the other hard part is sometimes some of them, the more sophisticated predatory people, and more sophisticated even just in avoidance of responsibility and accountability will act like, oh, I'm working so hard. You know, you're the one that saved me. It wasn't until I met you that I knew that I had this problem. I mean, I heard all of that stuff. But now I'm looking
back. And it would make you work harder, too. Yeah. You'd be like, wow, yeah, good job, Carrie. You're helping me. You're getting me through this. You're carrying half the load. And it's just all talk because really you're carrying the full load.
Yeah.
You're carrying that rock by yourself, but he's talking you through it and saying, congratulating you and encouraging you. And it's now making you feel like you're doing something, but nothing's moving.
Exactly. And I didn't recognize that nothing was moving. That was the other awful part was, he did enough things that made me think that things were improving because everybody knows addiction's not an easy thing to get over. I mean, even with your situation with the alcohol, you know, people don't just stop drinking overnight. It's a rare situation. Sometimes it's a process before they kind of realize, well, this isn't working. And then they have this big, like a horrible epiphany and then things start to change. But it can take a while to get there. And I assume the same about the sex addiction. It's going to take a while to get there. But here's the thing. You're right. I didn't recognize because partly he was hiding it. He was so good at being very sneaky. One time, for example, he actually parked the car near where his therapist's house was because we had a location app turned on to make it look like he was in therapy for an hour, hour and a half while he was out doing something else.
They're so sneaky.
I know. He actually parked it, left the phone inside the car and then walked somewhere and did some stuff he wasn't supposed to do that he knew would be very upsetting and wrong to the relationship. Yeah, super, super sneaky stuff. But when you said that, though, that I was carrying the whole weight, it's interesting because somebody on the outside actually saw this. They recognized that I was carrying the weight. But I don't know what they saw, but I'll never forget it. And it stuck with me in that it was one of those things that people that give you is like a help, but maybe at the time you can't do anything with it, but it doesn't leave. You remember it. And then later on, it kind of, you circle back to like, wow, that was really powerful. And it got me thinking about something that I should have considered. But this is what happened. A mentor of mine early on, before even the Hoover, before the break in the relationship, said to me, you're carrying a very heavy load and I worry about you.
Wow.
I know. And I didn't like this guy. I didn't see in person. It was all online. He was a mentor, a writing mentor for me. But I ended up wondering, what did he see? But yet it stayed with me that he'd recognized that I was really overburdened and I was taking on way too much responsibility for this relationship. That was one of the things that really struck with me. But yeah, it gets hard, this loss of identity. So why did you say we? Why did you say it's our problem?
I honestly felt like it was a trained thing. Like I feel like he trained me to say we because he always said we. So in a kind of hypnotic way, he would say things repetitively and I would take that on and start to say it too. You know, we are the problem. Yes, we are in a cycle of abuse. We need help. We should start getting healthy. We should start getting fit. We should start going to the gym. We should get off the couch. And there were things that I wasn't really part of. You know, I wasn't laying on the couch all the time. Like I was actually afraid to take a nap in that marriage because it was frowned upon. He would call me lazy and he would call me all the things that he actually thought about himself as a projection towards me. He thought these things about himself and he couldn't say them, so he said them to me. But the we was, I actually did take that on. And I think the repetitive kind of, we need help, honey, we need to get better, we need to be healthier, we need to be more loving, we need to be more compassionate. When he said that over and over again in this kind of repetitive way, it almost like hypnotized me, made me think that that's true. Okay, yeah, we do need to do this. Like, we are a family. Yes, we need to make sure that we get better. And I kind of forgot that I didn't really have a whole part in this. Like, my intention wasn't there to just be lazy and not work on the relationship and be angry all the time. I was working really hard at keeping things calm and making him happy. But the more he kept saying we, the more I thought, yeah, maybe I am. It is a we. We are married. We took vows and we are in this together. We are raising these kids together and we are supposed to be responsible for giving them a life and a role model what love looks like. And so I did take that on. I basically thought, you know, we did get married. We do have this responsibility of being role models for our kids. We do have this responsibility of making this marriage work. And even though back in my mind, I knew he was the problem, it became a we problem, which became a me problem.
Did you recognize that you were taking it on psychologically? Now, I hear that you sort of, it moved from this is a his responsibility to a joint responsibility. I could hear that that's how it started to feel for you because that's the way he was framing it. But did you also then start to feel like it, maybe you, in a way, kind of like gaslighting you, that you started to believe maybe I am doing something that contributes to this issue?
I don't know if I consciously figured that part out in the moment in the marriage. Now I do. But looking back, I really thought it is we. And I didn't think to take it on as me. It was more like me as well. So I would hold him accountable and I'd say, hey, this doesn't make me feel good when you say this. And you know, you were really mean last night and you said some things that I don't think you meant to say and it really hurt me. And he would say, you say really mean things too. Remember that time you said this? Remember that fight we had 2 years ago? You know, and he would bring up something that is true. We would have a fight and I would say nasty things. And it would absolve him of what happened last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. So it was a we thing. You know, it was difficult because I didn't recognize that that was gaslighting.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we don't recognize that in the moment. We don't recognize it when it's happening to us because it's like a brainwashing.
Yeah.
But it did feel very much like it is a we problem and I'm taking my responsibility for my part.
Mm-hmm. Even the fact that you had the bravery to bring up the issues and talk to him about it, I never had that kind of leeway. Boy, that would have been not, that would have gotten really bad really fast. So I was more likely after things just kind of massively blown up. I write him these long letters and then send him these long letters, which I recently heard. It was a Dr. Romney, I think, that said, here's signs that you're being gaslit. If you do these things, maybe it wasn't her, maybe it was somebody else. But they said, if you write really long letters of explanation and trying to like declare what's true, that's a sign that you're actually being gaslit. Like, I would send him the longest letters of trying to explain my position, explain what happened, explain my intentions, explain how much I loved him, and, you know, on and on, trying to make things better. But interestingly enough, it wasn't because I went off on him or even questioned why he was the way that he was. Like, why did he raise his voice? Or why did that upset him? Or why did he say that? No, it was simply that what would happen would be he would do something wrong, like devastatingly wrong. I would catch something. I mean, there was so many betrayal after betrayal, which people like reading Love You More, like, why did you stay? Well, because I really thought that's what commitment looks like, is that you stay by your man. I mean, that's what a good woman, a good Christian woman did. Mm-hmm. But when I would confront him, he would get pissed off. He would react and then blow. And then I would write these long letters and explaining why his betrayal hurt me. And now that I stand back and even hear myself say that, I think, what utter ridiculousness, really, to act as if, and here's the sort of subtle form, to act as if my reaction to a tremendously painful thing is wrong. That's not a problem. I mean, if somebody came in and smashed my toe with a big heavy boot, I didn't make them do that. Why am I apologizing for having a reaction to the pain that they caused me by smashing my foot? But that's what we do. These types of betrayals aren't just like stepping on my foot. It's like you stabbed my heart, literally, yes. Or shredded my heart. And then I'm having a reaction, but I'm bad for having a reaction. I'm the problem because I should somehow just suck up and absorb all this ridiculous pain that's happening.
And going back to even just writing those long paragraphs, those long letters, it's almost as if that was your safe place to communicate. Mm. You didn't have a space to say it in words. You didn't have a space to say it out loud. And no, I didn't write those long letters, but my space, my healthy space, or my safe space of communication was in tears, in emotion. And when you say, you know, you had the courage to come up to him and say those things, and I could never say that, it wasn't from this firm, confident place. It was like, honey, I'm pleading. Mm. I'm like, you really hurt me last night. And I would cry and I would get emotional. And he would just look at me and kind of look disgusted, as if like, come on, like get up off your knees and stop crying like that.
Yeah.
Like, get over yourself. Like, it wasn't a big deal. You do these things too. You did this 2 years ago. You said nasty things. Get over
right,
it.
Right, right.
And that, it was such a like vulnerable place for me to just break down that way and plead, like, you know, snotting, crying, like, and you would never see me like this today, because like that's a part of me that felt so broken and looked down on. And it was this vulnerable space that I was in where I would just spill it all out and hope that he would, maybe a part of him, the part that I fell in love with when we first met, would hold me.
Yeah.
And hold it. He just would just drop it.
Yeah.
And I did it. And I did it anyway. You know, that was my way of communicating, and it still didn't do anything.
You just kind of tied something together for me that just, it yeah. made things click. And here's what I think happens, that why we end up feeling like we're the problem. It's because we are so invested in the relationship that our identity has become invested in this relationship. We want them to want us, to want to love us, want to be in a relationship as much as we want that relationship, as much as we want them, as much we're working to save things between us. And it's like, please, I'm handing you my heart on a platter. Can't you see how much I love you? Can't you see that the sacrifice I'm making? Isn't that a lovely thing? Don't you want to work just as hard for this? And they look at that and think, you're sick. To ask that from me is a sick thing. And for you to even approach me in that way, you're pathetic. And you're right. I lost my voice. You were losing your voice. Both of us were losing not only our own voice, our own power, but we were also losing the power of the relationship. We were saying, isn't this what we have, this beautiful thing? Why are you crushing it? Don't you want to save it? And they look at that and think, I don't even get what you're talking about. I mean, that was a part that was the strangest for me. It's as if what I was struggling for was another language or a foreign concept they couldn't even grasp. Us and us, what is an us? It's always about me. It's always about what I want. It's always about what I'm doing. And you're along for the ride. And if you don't participate and be the best writer possible by shutting up and putting up, you're the problem here.
It's interesting how it's an us when it works for them and benefits their need and what their goal is, which is just to be entitled to what they want and get what they want. But when we're talking about us, and it's coming from a place of saving the relationship. Yeah. It's coming from the place of yearning back for the moments where we did feel connected and close, where we did come together in unity. That us, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That's a you problem. That's on you. You're trying to fix something. There's nothing to be fixed. Last night happens all the time. We don't need to talk about it. You don't need to get anything from me. You do it too. Why do you need me to apologize and acknowledge it?
Yeah.
There's no us. That's a you problem. You're the one complaining. I'm okay. You're not okay. So get fixed. You fix yourself, because it's not an us problem.
Exactly.
It's a you problem.
Yeah, because we are essentially invisible. We're no more than an appendage in that relationship. And that's just another piece of evidence of that. That our pain, our desire for the relationship, our even desire to share the responsibility for what's going wrong, all it's about is what they want in that moment, and they seek it. And if we have any kind of reaction, then that shames them as inappropriate, and they're mad at us for that. So it's kind of like that's the dynamic that's going on, which is very different than what victims are looking for. Victims are going looking for a partnership, a connection, a sense of belonging from each other. I bet you that narcissists and other really toxic people like that don't have any sense of belonging. They don't even belong to themselves. I think they're voraciously hungry, seeking for something to fill them, but it's not belonging. That would be too risky for them. So we've talked a lot about the fact that it feels like us and that we're the problem. So let's talk about how to know that it isn't you. Both of our partners had an overt problem, so that made it easy for us to recognize that it wasn't us. But I know that's not always the case. There are some people that come into these relationships because they come in young, or they come in and there isn't an overt problem. It's just lots and lots of conflict and lots of blaming and victim shaming and victim shifting. All of that's happening, which makes it really hard then to determine who is the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Suggestions about how you help clients who work with you know that it isn't them. What's something that you do that really works?
So I would say, going back to reactive abuse, so when this toxic person would come at you and lunge at you with something to try to create a reaction out of you. So the example I had where I'm sitting on the couch and I'm relaxed and he comes in and starts accusing you of something. Oh, you're in a bad mood. Why does your face look like that? Did you take your medication? Are you on your period? You fighting with your mom again? What's wrong with you? Why are you like that? For me, in that moment, there was a part of me that was, now I'm not relaxed. Now I want to come at you. And now I want you just to stop.
Yeah.
And I'll do something out of character. So the key distinction here, what to look for, and this is the advice I want to give, is take a look at what do you do? Like, what's your behavior? What's your character? What is your pattern? Is this something you normally do? Do you get agitated if anybody just comes up to you and walks up to you? Are you like this all the time? Are you easily angry? If that's the case, then maybe that is something you want to look at. Maybe that is something internal that you could look at as far as, you know, your own anger issues. Do you have an issue with anger management? Do you get agitated quickly? But if this is something out of character, that's out of your regular behaviors, and immediately you feel like this doesn't feel aligned with who I am, you feel maybe guilt, regret, you wish this wouldn't happen. And you look at yourself like, this is not me. This is not a pattern. I've not done this in the past. I don't do this historically in relationships. If you ask yourself, if I've done this in the past many times, then maybe it's something to look into. But if this is out of character and this is something that you immediately feel regret because it's not in alignment with who you are, then that is an abusive tactic that the narcissist has on you. This is something they do to pull you out of character, to show you, hey, you're just as bad as me. Look at you. That would be my advice, is to really look at your past versus what you feel right now. And if you don't feel like that's you, that's not you.
Yeah, I love that. I think that that's a super helpful thing. I think where people get tripped up on that is that some people have a history of choosing toxic relationships, and they'll say, well, it is a part of my past. I've been here before, but not all of their past. I think if you were to include family relationships and friendships, do you have problems at work? Are you always seem to like instigating drama at work? But so you'll see the sort of this consistent pattern of difficulty, all spheres of your life. That to me is a sign that maybe you are the one who's having the issues. Maybe that you are the person who's really struggles taking responsibility, accountability, and reflecting on the way that you're impacting other people. But if this is something that's happened out of a relationship or a few relationships, and like you said, it's coming out of a reaction, it feels foreign to you, and you have a lot of deep sense of regret and guilt and uncomfortableness with it, that's a really strong indication this is probably a reaction to the relationship, a reaction to something from outside of you.
That's actually really important to bring up, that it's not just your romantic relationships that you want to look at. You want to look at the history of your other relationships, your friendships, your work history, people in your life, your family. Because yeah, you're right. When people find one toxic person, they become familiar with it. They might find another and another. And then if they have a history of toxic relationships, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have a history of anger or a history of reaction or that type of behavior that's out of character. if they're out of character in their romantic relationships, but they aren't like that in any of their other areas of life, that is a really good key distinction.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what we're going to talk about over on the podcast extra, so for those who become subscriber of the newsletter, we're going to get into the fact that narcissists often think that they're not the problem either. And so we're going to talk about, how do you know then if that's more of a narcissistic dynamic or if actually it's a victim dynamic? How do we distinguish between these two? So I hope that you'll consider becoming a subscriber and join us for the podcast extra. But Ro, thank you so much for being with me today. This is such a fascinating topic, a hard one. I know that this is a subject that you and I hear so much that people get really confused and frightened. I think it scares them that maybe they're the problem. And so I really appreciate that we could share and talk about this further today. So thank you, and I'll see you back next month, hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.